Yeah, I mean, if I was a betting man, I would say let's place a friendly wager on something. But I'm not a betting man. I don't do that kind of thing.
No, there's no. We don't need those kind of stakes. We still like talking to each other.
Yes, and there's also, you know, a second game coming in 2 weeks. So I don't want to make you wear any funny hats or you know, a giant D'Angelo Harrison face tattoo or something, because that would be weird.
No, that would be very strange. Plus, you know, I'm a public educator. I couldn't walk into work with that.
Yeah, I was about to say, if you go to school with a, you know, with a whole... You know what, actually? It should be like a D'Angelo Harrison tattoo set. He has, like, the scroll on the... I think it's the right arm. I think you should get that.
Oh, okay. St. John's wins. Yeah, that'll be number one on my list of things to do if St. John's beats Rutgers.
Uh-huh. I'm sure your wife will love that.
She'll be real excited.
Yes.
This is Not Half Bad, and this is Dave White of OnTheBanks.com, the Rutgers blog, and you can find me at Twitter at Dave_White.
This is Norman of Rumble in the Garden, the St. John's blog, and you can find me at ECoastBias on Twitter. Or you can find the Rumble full feed at RumbleSBN, also on Twitter.
So, Norman, how's it going this week?
Well,
Big East play started, and I think both teams have two games under their belts. So
I think we need a little applause moment.
Yeah, I'd say 1-1 for both squads.
Yes, it's a surprisingly good 1-1, given that I think for both teams the second game of the one turned out a lot better than everybody hoped. I'm pretty sure that predictions were that Pittsburgh was going to come into Rutgers and, you know, set things right with them, and predictions.
No, they played nobody.
Yeah, well, there's that. But I think I don't know if Rutgers was favored in that game. I don't think they were.
No, they were 7-point underdogs.
Okay, they were 7-point underdogs. Meanwhile, St. John's went into Cincinnati and were 13.5-point underdogs on the road, and both teams won.
That's impressive. The St. John's game is impressive. That's scary for this Wednesday. I thought you guys stood no shot.
Yeah.
So yeah, no chance.
So did many of the fans, the writers, the pundits. Yeah.
So what happened? I didn't see the game. I didn't get home from the Rutgers game in time to see the end of the game. So what happened? How did it work out?
For one, Cincinnati, generally, their style is to try and wear opponents out, to get the other team playing in the proverbial muck, and trying to get the game to a point where nobody's doing quite the things that they should be doing, where the game isn't smooth, it's choppy, there are a lot of deflections. There are a lot of there's just a lot of disruption in the game. That's what Cincinnati tries to do. And then in the last 10 minutes, they take over the game and imprint their will on the game. Well, against St. John's was happily dealt with their version of putting things in the muck and made Cincinnati uncomfortable as well. Cincinnati tried to get the ball away from D'Angelo Harrison and did a good job of that. But on the other side, St. John's did a really good job of keeping the ball out of the hands of Sean Kilpatrick. So yeah. Kashmir Wright got to score a little bit, but then the second leading scorer, I believe, was Titus Rubles. Having Titus Rubles as your second leading scorer is not Cincinnati's game plan. Wait,
he's a St. John's player? I've never even heard of him.
No, he's a Cincinnati player.
Oh, okay. Either way, I've never heard of him.
Titus Rubles is he's a junior college player who is brought over to be sort of a lengthy 3-4 man. He's kind of a small forward swingman type who adds shooting and versatility off of the bench for the Bearcats. But he's not intended to be the second most efficient scorer on the Bearcats. It's supposed to be Kashmir Wright and Sean Kilpatrick in the backcourt, while Jaquan Parker helps out, and then the big man gets some scrap rebounds, some offensive boards, some putbacks, and that's the way Cincinnati's supposed to play. But Cincinnati found themselves unable to generate the kind of scrappy offense they meant to. St. John's actually out-rebounded somebody, keeping the ball out of the hands of Cheek Mudge and out of Justin Jackson's hands, and Cincinnati didn't know what to do. It was a very surprising game, and there's a lot of good to take away from it. the good to take away from it doesn't include actually watching it. I cannot recommend one watches a game where there are a combined where there's a combined 33 turnovers in the whole game and a combined 23 in the first half. Both teams turn the ball over more than 30% of the time in the first half. The team shot 26% for Cincinnati and 41% inside the arc for St. John's. It was a really ugly piece of work. It was basketball's version of rough trade. I don't know. It was it was an ugly, ugly game. There weren't a lot of free throws drawn. I think the referee certainly let them play, and they let them play until it became the kind of game where the winning team scored 0.76 points per possession, which, if you know points per possession, is really pretty poor. That's the kind of stuff that loses you games. That's the kind of thing that Louisville does to opponents. So it was just two teams just, you know, trying to find shots and not finding the right shots, turning the ball over, deflecting the ball. And somehow in that mess, which is really Cincinnati's milieu, St. John's found themselves just gritting and gutting out a really good win. It was a surprise, but it was also a lot of the kind of maturity you want to see in a Big East team. You know, it was a team that realized that, yes, things aren't going the way we'd like it to. This isn't how anybody drew it up. And we're going to gut it out and win. We're going to, you know, take the shots that we have. We're going to try and make them work. And just, you know, take each bad play. You put that in the background and just move on to the next play. And I think St. John's did a really good job of that.
Especially, I mean, I watched the game before that, the second half of St. John's Villanova, and for you to describe St. John's surviving just an ugly game and winning by what they win by one, after seeing the wide open, you know, free for all that was St. John's Villanova, is really impressive.
Yeah, and you know, the St. John's Villanova game in its own way was pretty sloppy. There was just a real lack of control on both sides, it seemed. Except Villanova in the second half did impose a bit of their will, or certainly drove inside the paint and drew the fouls that they wanted to draw. So I think, in a sense, they had control. It just looks like wildness. It's not what we think of as a organized basketball game.
Right.
But what Cincinnati, you know, found themselves doing was, you know, they were trying to play their game. They were trying to impose their game on St. John's. And then they found that the game was also imposed on them, and they didn't know how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just a really impressive win to go in there and take them, you know, let them do what they want to do to you and still come out with a win.
Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of, in my mind, there were some very interesting under-the-radar performances. Above the radar is Jakar Sampson, who led the team with 16 points and 8 rebounds, but he shot 5 of 15 to get there and often looked still a little out of sorts, but he still found ways of getting points, getting to the line, just working hard and using his athleticism. D'Angelo Harrison's highlight reel, off-balance, one-handed three-pointer from the corner probably is the highlight of the game. But, you know, there are guys like Amir Garrett who gritted it out down low, Chris Obekpa who actually rebounded, and some good moments from Sir Dominic Poynter and Felix Balamu who used their length to be really bothersome to the Bearcats.
It's just, you know, because I've... My view of St. John's is kind of a little bit of an undermanned team. From what I saw, them forces turnovers, gets out and runs, that kind of game, which is, I just thought, you know, the Villanova game would be a much better matchup. This completely flips my expectations of St. John's kind of on its head.
I don't know that it should. I think that, you know, St. John's still wants to play in a game that's a little more open, but, you know, to their credit, one of the things they did well against Cincinnati is to take their open opportunities and really run with them. The chances that they had where they either got a deflection or they got or Cincinnati made an error or just missed a shot, you know, they turned around and they turned those missed shots into shot attempts very quickly.
Yeah. So, because Rutgers has both St. John's and Seton and Cincinnati on the schedule this week. So, what would you say? How do you beat Cincinnati?
I think there's a bit of not of trying to do too much that teams might do with Cincinnati. You know, you try to run your offense, and sometimes you just have to understand, all right, Cincinnati's actually very good at taking away certain things. For example, they took away D'Angelo Harrison's ability to go to his right, and they made him mm-hmm. go left. And a team has to respond to that and just find ways of scoring. But I think most importantly is to keep them, you know, keep them taking bad shots.
Right.
You know, make sure that, you know, they're jacking up bad threes, make sure that the big men don't touch the ball, and make Sean Kilpatrick beat you and make him beat you while being uncomfortable.
That's very, very interesting. They sound a lot like Pittsburgh.
Yeah. I think they have a lot. They have some of what Pittsburgh has, but I mean, Pittsburgh's is an interesting team, you know, and let's shift gears and talk about Rutgers' win. I have some thoughts about Pittsburgh after seeing that game and some real issues that they seem to have. So tell me, how did Rutgers win this game?
Yeah, Rutgers they did pretty much what Cincinnati did to Pittsburgh and made them shoot three pointers. And Rutgers just came out offensively and basically blitzed Pittsburgh. I don't think Pittsburgh expected Rutgers to be as hot as they were shooting and getting out and running. So I think they were kind of surprised that, you know, every time they missed, Rutgers had two guards up the court, you know, and it really opened up and Rutgers was able to get some easy baskets. And then they were open around the perimeter and it really the first half was just – it was Rutgers' best first half of the year. The second half was probably Rutgers' best defensive half of the year. They really – they kind of let Pittsburgh back in it, mostly because Rutgers made a lot of mistakes on the offensive end, turnovers. I think the first seven possessions, there were six turnovers for Rutgers.
Yeah,
and
mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh was able to get within two, but Rutgers really bore down defensively, and it was kind of a bend don't break, which is something we've seen from Rutgers this year. They seem to get up to these big leads and then the other team makes a run and it kind of surprises Rutgers, but they were able to survive it this time, and it was because of defense, which throughout the year really hasn't been that impressive. Plus Eli Carter, you know, came off the bench and got 23 points, led all scorers. And he's really the only guy on the team that can create his own shot. Mm-hmm. And, that really helped. I think it was that Rutgers brand of chaos you were just talking about on the offensive end. Let's get out and run. Let's find shots any way we can. And, you know, there were a lot of things in that game. Jerome Seegers has been in a slump all year, played his best game at point guard, 7.6 assists, and just was in control, just led the team the whole game. So it was definitely Rutgers' best game of the year on the defensive end and best offensive half of the year, the first half, you know. So that was their win. They kind of forced the issue on Pittsburgh, who surprised me. I was just looking at Pomeroy rankings, and Pittsburgh's still ranked 12th.
Yeah, it's one of the features of Pomeroy's system and any system that deals with measuring quality by how well a team or how efficient a team is and how inefficient it can make an opponent. In most cases, it's a pretty effective gauge of talent. And it's not that Rutgers isn't terrible. It's not that Pittsburgh is suddenly terrible. They had two games where they had some possibly outlier performances. They didn't, you know, the Cincinnati game, I think, was a true test. And against Rutgers, it seemed like they just had a really bad, you know, first few minutes. And that's the difference in the game. It's not that for the rest of the game, they weren't as good as Rutgers, maybe better. But no, I mean, in truth, it was interesting to see the beginning of that second half where Pittsburgh seemed to find their legs and be, you know, Pittsburgh for a little bit and create a lot of chaos. Though I think a lot of that chaos was Rutgers being Rutgers.
I I think Rutgers' biggest problem this year is they are stunned when teams don't go away. Seriously, I think they've been able to build these leads. I mean, even the Syracuse game, Rutgers is up 20-18, you know, 10 minutes into the game and playing well. And, you know, they're kind of surprised that Syracuse goes on this run and it turns into a remarkable run instead of a, you know, 10-3 run. It's a 24-0 run or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I think that's their biggest problem. That's what's going to hurt them this year is every time a team doesn't go away or kind of pushes, Rutgers gets surprised. And I think that's what they're learning. And hopefully the game yesterday, the Pittsburgh game, was a real, you know, hey, we can still survive this. We're learning what to do when this happens. Kind of thing. But yeah, I could see Pittsburgh kind of – I felt Pittsburgh kind of forced Rutgers into some really bad decisions. And I hate to say this, but Pittsburgh got a couple breaks from the refs in the middle of their big run to make the game close. That helped out a bit. But I mean, that's just because I'm not a Jim Burr fan.
Yeah. No, nobody's a Jim Burr fan. I've got to say, though, that generally I was very impressed by – Rutgers' performance at the end. I think they did, you know, there were some slightly less intelligent plays, some runouts or some runs to the rim by guys like Miles Mack that you thought, why didn't you just hold it up? But it's not, but they look pretty good. They look like they're maturing. And I do think that it's one of the few times you can say, oh, that team is maturing before our eyes.
Yeah, you could definitely see it. I mean, the other problem Rutgers had early in the year is when things go bad, and on offense, Rutgers would try to do it themselves. Carter would jack up a three. Mac would, you know, drive to the basket and get blocked. But I felt like even when they were making bad plays and turnovers, the bad plays came off of, you know, trying to move the ball around as opposed to trying to do your own thing and taking a shot, you know, 5 seconds into the shot clock, taking a half court three. And I think that's a sign of maturity and a sign of learning. And I think it'll pay off in the future.
And I think that's true. I think that is a feature that I see of Rutgers, that there's a certain period where Eli Carter or Miles Mack just feel like they haven't gotten theirs. And then they're looking for theirs and everything goes wrong. I think when Dane Miller is a facilitator and trying to attack, I think when Mike Poole is, you know, hitting the occasional shot, I think they're a much better team than when it's just Eli Carter and Miles Mack thinking they have to hero ball the team into a win.
Yeah, I agree. There's less of that, I think, as the year's gone on. I disagree with you about Dane Miller because his facilitating can at times be extremely frustrating because a lot of times he gets to the hole and instead of laying it in or dunking it, which he can do, he passes it off and surprises, you know, the arena and turns into a turnover.
This is true. He can be a little bit wild. It's it is the Dane Miller problem. One other thing, though, that I noticed about Rutgers, and especially in Pittsburgh's run to begin the second half, was that Rutgers, and I think this is a general thing, they're not good passers. Even guys who rack up assist numbers or don't have huge turnovers, just in general, you see passes that just seem either the wrong pass or a pass to the wrong area. You know, there are passes to Wally Judge in the post that lead him both away from the basket and close to the baseline. I think one of those might have actually been a turnover. You'll see, you know, guys trying bounce passes across the top of the key. Just weird little things where it just seems like just good crisp passing and, you know, the receiver should run to the ball.
I agree with that, but I also think that's one of those things that happens when things go bad. If you watch them when things are going well, you know, that doesn't happen. It seems like when things go bad, they panic a little and they try to make the smart play, but it's a bad smart play, if that makes any sense. You know, a low bounce pass to a post guy where he can't handle it. And that's what happened a lot against Syracuse. Rutgers made some – they ran an offense. They tried to get the ball inside, but the passes, you know, were going off Judge's hands, you know, or Kadeem Jack's hands because they were these low bounce passes when – I think a smarter, crisper pass would have broken up that run a little bit earlier. I'm not saying Rutgers would have won. They never would have won that game, but it wouldn't have had that embarrassing 24-0 run in the middle.
This is true. There are certain things that you do when you're pressing and you're just not doing the technically right thing, even if you have the right idea. And I think you're right. I think there's definitely a lot of those right idea, wrong execution kind of moments. You know, they do say some pundits do say that, you know, kids today don't know how to throw a good entry pass. And it's true.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's very tough to watch sometimes. You know, being 0-2 in the Big East for Rutgers right now would have had a shot at being the death knell for Mike Rice with everything that's gone on. Yeah. And I think that win yesterday was huge because, you know, not to say that they will win, but their schedule over the next 4 or 5 games is, you know, teams they can beat. I think that's very important because 0-2, you start questioning yourself, and teams with Rutgers, even a team they can beat, is never a guaranteed win. Mm-hmm. So
this is true. On the St. John's
0-2 could lead to 0-7 very quickly, but 1-1 with confidence could change that.
On the St. John's side, I think 0-2 isn't, you know, any sort of death knell for, or wouldn't have been any sort of death knell for Steve Lavin. What's going on right now is that I think St. John's has, you know, they're in this position where they need to reawaken the fan base, where they have to get people excited because a lot of fans are a little surly about the UNC Asheville loss or about having 4 losses in the non-conference when they think that they have this team that's ready to possibly dominate. So for St. John's, you know, 1-1 with a highlight reel win in league play is really important for just the general psyche around or the general attitude around the program and, you know, for the players' development as well.
Right. I agree. So going forward, here we are. We're 1-1. Rutgers is 1-1. St. John's is 1-1. And they have a game on Wednesday where they face each other.
I know. You know, I've got to say that I was thinking earlier about how it used to be that when St. John's and Rutgers met up in the season, it was the kind of game where the loser of that game should just, you know, pack it in, just, you know, mail in the rest of the season, just start, I don't know what, because there wasn't really a lot of hope on either roster. But this is a game where they meet up and there's hope for both teams.
Yeah, I think the loser of this game is not out of anything, but the winner of this game could set up something very interesting for the conference play. They could have a really fun season. And, you know, I don't know who the St. John's have after Rutgers. Because Rutgers has Cincinnati, but it's at home. So, you know, I think Rutgers looked at this 4-game stretch to start and said, all right, let's be 2-2. And see where we stand there.
Mm-hmm. After Rutgers, St. John's has Georgetown and Notre Dame both in the Garden. It's a 3-game garden run.
Okay, so that's, you know, in the Garden, beating Rutgers would give them some nice momentum with the 2 ranked teams coming in. Mm-hmm. So, all right, so here's my question as a Rutgers fan asking you, the St. John's fan, how do you beat St. John's?
The thing with St. John's is that there are currently, it seems like there are a lot of ways to beat them. If you can get on the offensive glass and get some putbacks, St. John's hasn't really had an answer for that. And I think that that's been the main bugaboo, that teams get second and third chances while also clearing their own misses. Also, you know, if you can, St. John's has been very good at keeping opponents off the line, and if a team can get to the free throw line, despite St. John's's zone and their ability to not foul people, I think that that's a real boon for the opponent. Other than that, I think that it just comes down to good defense and not letting them run all over the other team.
So making shots.
Yeah.
At least on Rutgers' end, you know, to keep a team from running, they're going to have to make their shots.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of yes and no. I think it's possible to miss your shots and keep St. John's from running. It's just very, very hard because they do a very good job of going from defense to offense, and it's what they're one of the strengths of the team on offense. Getting them into the half court does make for a very different game. And then, you know, you're leaving it up to your ability to make shots against an occasionally frustrating trapping defense that will speed you up in places.
What's interesting is listening to you say that gives me hope, especially on the rebounding end, because I think Rutgers has the potential to be a very good rebounding team this year. They out-rebounded Syracuse, probably the only highlight of that game. Yeah, Rutgers out-rebounded Pittsburgh 36-24. So rebounding is starting to turn into a strength. Free throw shooting, at least from the guards, is a strength. And Rutgers plays better fast. So having a defense that forces you to play fast might be a strength.
You know, this reminds me actually of last year's game where St. John's and Rutgers played a game that I don't know that it recorded as fast in terms of possessions, but it felt fast. It was kind of wild. It was just a little all over the place. It was a 61-58 win. It was 64 possessions. And it was just a lot of mistakes and a lot of deflections on both ends. And it really seemed to play to Rutgers' strengths and not St. John's strengths.
Yeah, I was at that game. I remember just the grind them out. Like, it never felt like the game should be that close, but it was close. Mm-hmm. You know, both teams felt like they should be being blown out. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's close. Not that both teams were playing really well. You know, one team should be blowing out the other.
That game was a real dog, man. It was a real dog.
I'm trying to remember. What was it? Dane Miller on a putback?
I think so. I think it was something along those lines, because it wasn't it wasn't one of the little guards. I believe it was Dane Miller, yeah, on a putback.
I think Miller had a putback, and then there were some fouls, and then Harrison missed like a half-court three, mm-hmm. You know, just a step over the line. He was set, but he missed it to tie, which was good because it was a late game. Yeah, it was, and I live about an hour away, so...
I believe St. John's was wearing the black, so we have... Our writer Quinn has some opinions about the black, as do many others. I think St. John's is something like 2-10 or 2-12 in the black uniforms.
They should really wear those on Wednesday, then.
No, it's not time to take the black back, you know.
No, but I think, you know, what you're saying about St. John's weaknesses kind of plays to Rutgers' strengths. Just playing fast, rebounding, and free throw shooting. Hopefully, you guys still press before you get into the zone?
Depends on the situation, not at all times, but the team does press a lot, yes.
Okay. I think that, yeah, all right. I'm just trying to think about how Rutgers plays. I can help or hurt them. Rutgers is so turnover prone that that's where St. John's would be able to really beat Rutgers and even possibly turn it into a rout. If the guards aren't taking care of the ball and can't get it in, you know, I could see this being a lot like a lot of games for Rutgers where they come out hot and kind of, you know, St. John's gets them back into it by pressing and forcing a lot of turnovers. What are you expecting on Wednesday then for the big matchup between the podcast here?
Well, I am expecting pain. No, I'm expecting anger, violence, rain. No, it's kind of interesting though, because in the past they've done the Rutgers St. John's games as doubleheaders, because I don't know that they draw all that well, which is kind of unfortunate, I suppose.
Yeah, but I don't think the Garden is sold out for college basketball, not in the Big East tournament, in quite some time.
No. There's there is a Groupon, by the way, for the game.
Is there? I didn't, you know, have responsibilities.
I'll find a link. I'll tweet it out at some point. The St. John's Twitter tweeted it out. But yeah, no, it's a 7 o'clock game in Madison Square Garden. It's I don't know that it's sold out, but I assume that it's not. I expect kind of a sloppy game, but I also expect that both teams are going to use that game to show off what it is that they can do well now. The teams are going to try and be a little bit more wide open. They're going to try and, you know, make a real show of it in the Garden. I think there are enough New Yorkers there that this will really mean something, taking this game.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, Poole and Jack, those guys are going to want these games on the Rutgers end. And I agree. I think there'll be a lot of pride on the line. Plus, it's kind of turning into a little bit of a rivalry ever since that Big East tournament game that there's still some time left on the clock for.
No, what are you talking about? Jim Burr had it right.
Yeah, him and Higgins were getting to stout before anybody else.
Yeah, I know. Look, I can't speak to that. That was an egregious mistake. But such is life. It's water under the bridge and other sort of platitudes. Yeah. But no, I mean, it is interesting to think about the Rutgers and St. John's. And, you know, the reason that we started this podcast is, you know, that you have these two area teams that have been kind of crappy for so long. And right now they're, you know, as we would say, not half bad. You know, they're in that weird mid-range where, you know, they could explode into something, you know, nationally relevant, or they could, you know, fall back to the depths that they have been in the past. But both teams have a lot more talent and they have a lot more confidence. And I think it's a really different game than in the Norm Roberts, Fred Hill era.
Yeah, that's a sigh of relief. Rice and Lavin have kind of, you know, turned it into somewhat of a rivalry. They're recruiting against each other. It's interesting because it's kind of made Seton Hall an afterthought. I mean, there's still that rivalry for Rutgers-Seton Hall, but in terms of recruiting and that sort of thing, I don't worry about them. I worry about Lavin and St. John's, mm-hmm. At least before we don't, you know, when we thought Rice could still recruit. I don't know what's going to happen from here on out, but
I think he'll still recruit. I think, you know, he's not trying to just punt the next few years or anything like that. But it is interesting that it's Rutgers and St. John's that are in this recruiting sandbox for, you know, the best players in the area. And Seton Hall, you know, they're trying to get in, but I guess they just do different things and they tend to get different players. And they, you know, they get good players. They're just more under the radar players.
You're so much nicer than I am.
Yeah, I know.
I'm waiting to see if Aquil Carr actually ever shows up on the South Orange campus there, you know, the Crime Stopper.
Mm-hmm. You know what it is, though? It's that I'm representing the other side of the river. I'm not on the Jersey side.
Yeah, I understand.
So to New Yorkers, you know, everything that happens in Jersey is like over there, you know, it's like this big mass of trees and houses and I don't know where the Giants live and such.
Yeah, I know what you mean. If it's a blowout either way, I'd be stunned.
Yeah, no, I'd be surprised if it was a blowout either way as well. Do you think Rutgers is going to win?
Prediction. I kind of like the Scarlet Knights message boards because I get a kick out of them. Mm-hmm. And I am participating in their Big East, you know, pick 'em kind of contest. And I did pick Rutgers to win because in a game that's too close to call, I got to go with the home team. So I think Rutgers comes out and plays strong. I'm kind of hedging my bets here.
Wait, I thought you said you had to go with the home team because you know it's in the Garden, right?
The Rutgers team, my hometown team.
Oh, okay. if you start trying to claim the Garden as a home, you know, they've played games in the Garden before, but really that's not a home.
I think Rutgers has a very good shot.
Nice. I think they do too, but I think St. John's will pull it out. If they can keep up the rebounding strength from before, from the Cincinnati game, if they can actually battle with Wally Judge and Wally Judge doesn't get a number of putbacks, I don't know.
Yeah, Judge and Jack are going to cause some matchup problems for mm-hmm. you, but Samson is going to cause some matchup problems for Dane Miller.
Mm-hmm. And if Chris Obekpa can continue to stay on his feet and just, you know, defend instead of going to block every shot, I think he'll round into a very impactful forward in this mm-hmm. game.
Yeah, what's interesting is Obekpa blocking shots may turn out to be – I don't think Rutgers forwards have learned the art of the pump fake yet.
No.
So him blocking shots may be a very valuable tool Wednesday. So what do you think going forward now in the Big East beyond the Rutgers game?
I can't really say. I think that, you know, Rutgers has – you know, Rutgers has certainly some – interesting games coming up. I mean, Cincinnati feels beatable now, but, you know, they might just right the ship and really put it on the Scarlet Knights. But then there's South Florida and Notre Dame, you know, teams that, that can be had. And then St. John's again. Meanwhile, for St. John's, they've got, you know, Georgetown and Notre Dame. And I don't know. I can't. It's hard to say, you know, two more games in the Garden, two more games with, you know, the bigger crowds. And I don't know. I don't know what to say about either one because, you know, St. John's can hang with anybody and Georgetown can, you know, score 45 in any game. So who knows?
It's amazing.
It is amazing.
So you mentioned Notre Dame as a game that can be had. That game's at Notre Dame. If Rutgers wins that game, we're Rutgers will be in the NCAA tournament this year.
Oh, I'm sorry. Because, I didn't realize that was that.
It's so hard to go in there and win.
No. I take that all back then.
But other than that, yeah, Rutgers' schedule is interesting right now. And I honestly think Rutgers-St. John's, they split the two games.
Mm-hmm. I believe it.
Which probably means St. John's wins on Wednesday and Rutgers wins at the Rec.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's that. I guess we'll have to come back next week and see how this game went and how the Saturday games went. This is another episode of Not Half Bad, and I'm Dave White of OnTheBanks.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Dave_White.
This is Norman of Rumble in the Garden. You can find me at eCoastBias on Twitter.
Okay, and have a great week. We'll see you next week. Talk to you next week.
Indeed. Talk to you next week.